and ask that you stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do I have a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So move.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Number D.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder. I know you all know this, but this is a workshop. There will be no action taken, no votes taken on the topics discussed today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Madam Chair, yes, item D, at the board's last regular scheduled meeting, the board elected to move the process forward with Evergreen Solutions to assist with the performance management of the president and general manager. Dr. Ling is here today, and I'm going to turn it over to Cindy Herrera, Vice President of HR, to introduce him, okay?
Good afternoon, everyone. As we talked about last meeting at our board meeting, we do have Dr. Ling here to work through a workshop specifically on the performance review to see, reevaluate that and look at if that's going to be the best approach for Brian and for the board. And Dr. Ling's here to work us through that, and we have a presentation. I have it printed out as well if anybody would like that to write notes. I know I take notes, so I have that to provide you as well.
Can we get those copies now?
Yeah, I got them.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I appreciate your time and the invitation to come back and be with you this afternoon. Cindy was good enough to mention we have a short PowerPoint to guide our discussion. You may recall when I was visiting with you at your last board meeting, we have two sessions planned. One session today, which is much more conceptual, where we talk about what are some of the paths or avenues we could follow out of this process. And then the next session, before your next board meeting, we'll actually roll up our sleeves and begin the process of finalizing the form and the process that goes along with that form. So today we'll start at a relatively high level, and I want to share with you several items. I want to share with you very, very quickly an overview of the process that we will follow as we go through making the recommendations and providing the support to the board and putting in place a revised general manager performance evaluation. Then talk about the elements of success. What are some of the factors that other boards, not just utility boards, but boards in general, have found to be highly effective in encouraging the type of outcomes that they desire in a CEO, a president, or a general manager? Talk about your role and how that role will interface with that process, and what are some of the lessons learned, again, from other boards as it relates to their role in the review process. And then talk about several different alternatives that we could consider. Again, our goal being today more for me to receive feedback for you. As we go along, nothing formal about my presentation. If you have questions, if you want to say, can we go back to that slide and talk a few more moments about that? If you want to provide feedback on something and then potentially even provide a different set of feedback as we move through the presentation, that's perfectly fine. I have my notebook here to record some of the major themes that you identify and to also help us in the work in putting together the presentation for the next session. Again, which is much more operational and less conceptual. Then we'll really conclude with a set of questions that we need your help on, your guidance in regards to what are the most important elements or factors you wish for us to consider. And those factors will not only be the type of things we want to measure, but also how will they be measured. We don't have to decide all of that this afternoon. That will be a key part of, again, what we talk about next time. But if you have some guidance for me in that regard, it'll be beneficial. In the meantime, too, we'll be adding best practices. So one of the things that'll be a little bit different, I'll share with you some examples today just to give you an idea of what the language or the nomenclature really is all about. But we'll even spend more time on some of those best practices in our next meeting that we'll have. So our overview of the process, or the process as a whole, shared with you last time. Just as a reminder, we analyze your strategic direction by looking at what does your strategic plan conclude, what are some of the major items that you've identified as a board you wish to pursue from a mission standpoint and a goal standpoint. I did have the opportunity to speak with Brian. He was good enough to answer all of my questions and to pose some suggestions as it related to understanding what he does and how he does that work and his role here in comparison to even some other organizations. Other utilities that have general managers and how they function in that capacity. And then really we're at the third box. Today is holding that conceptual meeting with the board. Then our staff at Evergreen will go back, collect more best practices. At this point, we've communicated with 8 different utilities within Florida and outside of Florida. We will increase those contacts and bring back more information to you as part of that second meeting. But we will, in the meantime, put together, based on your feedback today, components that would make up the tool or the process that you would utilize. Again, not where we're coming back and recommending to you this is exactly what you need to do, but giving you something to respond to when we have that second meeting. In the second meeting, the operational meeting or workshop, we'll work through those components, hopefully refine those components, and then we'll come back to you with a deliverable that hopefully you can take action on that will be utilized going forward to govern the process as well as the outcomes related to the general manager's performance evaluation. So I wanted to start off with a quote. A quote about, it's a little bit older, 2008, but really has guided the thought as it relates to evaluating presidents, CEOs, and general managers and organizations, not just utilities, but organizations as a whole. Any assessment of a top executive begins with his or her unit's financial and operating metrics and progress against strategy. And so any organization, and your organization would be included in this, and you're doing quite a bit of this already, would include that as part of an evaluation process. You want to look at the strategy. Is your strategy being implemented or carried out? Or do you have a good steward responsible for implementing your strategy? And then what are the numbers? In essence, to back that up. What this researcher adds in the Harvard Business Review, and others would argue as well, but the former does not illuminate key management attributes. Neither helps to uncover the executive is doing that might help or hurt the company in the long term. And so really beginning in the mid-2000s, around the time of the Great Recession, a lot of discussions similar to those that occurred in the late 1990s began about, are we measuring enough when we look at the senior most executive in our organizations as a board? Are we looking at that position holistically as we can? And if not, what else should we include? And so part of the discussion today, and part of what I have to share with you, is really what are those practices? What has been done that's more holistic in nature? So what are the elements of success of a CEO in any organization? The CEO role is the most diverse. When you look at what a CEO does on a day-to-day basis, he or she will be involved in more tasks, more duties, deal with more change than really any other role in the organization as a whole. They also have an exciting role. Many times when CEOs, presidents, or general managers are surveyed, they indicate, I picked this job because I like the excitement. I like the diversity. I like the change that goes into it. Research shows that their actions have a disproportionate impact in comparison to the number of people in the organization, meaning as that most senior leader, I have more influence than any other employee on the outcomes of the organization. Some research would say 40%. The extreme of that research shows 70% of the outcomes of an organization could be linked back to the actions taken by the CEO. Some of the things that are identified in that research would be setting the strategy in conjunction with the board, shaping the culture, what type of organization do you have, what is the environment like, and getting the right team, hiring the right people, keeping the right people over time. And really, there are different models for success, so different organizations, different researchers have identified different components, but that graphic that's there on the right-hand side of the slide are the most common elements that are identified that relate to a successful CEO, and that would be managing him or herself, their behavior, setting an example for the employees that work for them, managing people, and that would be every type of interaction that they would have with individuals within the organization, managing projects or initiatives that would be identified for them, managing programs, so ongoing services within the service offering of the organization, leading the organization, that would be the strategic, the visioning, the guiding the mission in the organization on a day-to-day basis, or the key part of really linking your guidance that you provide that position down to the individual level of employees that are implementing those actions on a day-to-day basis. And the last would be managing relationships. And that would be managing everything from the relationship with the board to relationships with customers, relationships with employees, or other major stakeholders. And so really, regardless of what organization we're looking at, these factors come into play typically as the elements that the board has identified give us the highest probability of the outcome we desire through the CEO that works for us. What is the purpose of the evaluation? Really, the evaluation is one of several tools. So it's not the only method for feedback, direction, and communication to a CEO, but it is one of the principal ones that are utilized in most organizations. It should ensure that both the board and the general manager are in sync on the direction and goals of the utility, clarify roles and expectations over time, set future goals, maintain open communication, as well as enhance the working relationship between both parties. So any employee in any organization is critical. They understand what you want them to do and basic guidelines on how you want them to go about doing that, and then as a board, providing feedback to them on their success or areas of improvement related to that. Any evaluation has three key components. And so the three key components that we'll be interested in working with you in this engagement and then you'll be utilizing going forward is first is inputs. Those are the factors. That's what are you interested in measuring? What do you want to know about? What are the things that you feel like are most important for producing the outcomes that you desire? The middle is the analysis of the results. That's what do you do with those results? And we'll talk about in a few moments, some organizations are very numeric in how they go about this process, meaning everything has a number. Did we reach a revenue goal? Did we reach a certain level of satisfaction? Did we have a certain amount of employee engagement, if we assess engagement? Do we have a certain amount of internal promotions? It may also be, did we expand our customer base or the network in which we provide services? And that's all they look at. Some would be at that extreme. Others, at the other end of that spectrum, might be more interested in looking at a series of elements, could be the same elements, could be how happy are customers, could be how much are we increasing our network or our customer base, could be how happy are employees, but they provide their responses in written narrative, meaning they can look at any information that the board would be provided, and they draw their own conclusions. And so we'll talk a little bit about, in a few moments, that evaluator model versus really that analytical model, where you're taking information from a variety of sources, and instead of giving it a score, you're reviewing that information and producing some type of written narrative or some type of written guidance for the CEO. Then the last piece is really what comes out of this. So in some organizations, what comes out of this is a written document given to the general manager, simply saying, these are the things we have concerns about. These are the things we're pleased with. Here's the direction that we would like for you to follow. But the vast majority of organizations, there is some type of reward mechanism that goes along with that guidance. There's some type of review of pay. There's some type of bonus. There's some type of combination thereof that comes out of this process. And so the most important reason to go through this process is to provide that guidance, what we talked about before, setting the direction, ensuring that your representative among the staff knows exactly where he or she is to take the organization. But a second component, and a very common component in the marketplace, is also a mechanism for you to reward that individual. And that relates not only to your ability to retain your current incumbent, but also who you might hire in the future would be dependent on if they reach the goals that you establish as a board. What is the recognition they receive? Not unlike what an organization would have for any employee. That if the supervisor feels like I meet the goals or meet the responsibilities, this is basically what I receive as recognition or reward for that. So what are some of the concerns CEOs have? So when CEOs are surveyed, general managers, presidents, what do they say worries them the most or keeps them up at night as it relates to the performance evaluation process by the board? One of them is they have no idea how they'll be evaluated before the performance review. So you're not in that boat. You're providing guidance. You have a system process in place. But there are organizations that, in some ways, it's just a big surprise. They come before the board. They really don't know what the board is considering. And the board simply provides feedback on that set date and time to that CEO. So that's a very common concern in some organizations. The second would be expectations and judgments are based on a very limited view and limited information. And so this would be where board members have full-time jobs, or they serve on multiple boards within their community or within other organizations. And many times among the CEOs that have this comment, they will indicate as well, I don't provide a lot of information to the board. I only provide certain pieces of information to the board. So the board has to act on that limited amount of information that they have available to them. The third would be communication does not occur 1 year or sufficiently in advance. And so this is the idea that if I have an employee that works for me and there's certain goals or expectations I have for that employee, I have to give them time to demonstrate that. I have to tell them over the next year or the next 6 months or the next quarter, I would like to see the following things occur. Are you to reach these levels of expectations that I'm identifying for you? Then you have to step back and give the employee the time in order to accomplish that. CEOs and a variety of organization types, including utilities, indicate in survey work that many times this can be a moving target. It can be, well, this is the fire we're fighting today. We're going to evaluate you about that because last month we had this problem. And I'll give you a real example. We worked with a water utility not too long ago. The dam broke. Literally one of the dams in one of the reservoirs broke. And as you can imagine, that CEO and the senior management in that organization had to spend a lot of time dealing with the fallout of water being in neighborhoods. And also, it was one of two reservoirs that served a relatively large community. What are we going to do if we don't have the water that we need at some point in the future because the dam breaking? And so in that case, when he came up for review, he was praised quite heartily because in the last 30 days, he dealt with a big crisis situation. But it would have been very hard a year ago for him to plan for that to be the principal area of his review or to even align resources on the assumption that the dam would break. In his case, he had. He did have a contingency plan. He did have something in place. But you can imagine the reverse, that if that's principally 90-100% of what my review is about and I'm not prepared, then I'm going to receive a quite poor review. And so it's important that those factors be predictable and also that that executive be given time to address those issues. The executive is not informed about topics or standards he's expected to address. It ties in a little bit to the example that I gave you, as well as the previous bullet. And that's the idea that there may be things that are important to me as one of the board members. That's not part of the formal evaluation, but I score the other areas lower because that's the important thing to me and it didn't happen. And so there's all kinds of biases we have as evaluators, every one of us, when we evaluate something. You're probably aware, even from the research that your staff does related to customers. In the public domain with public services, many times I remember my last experience the most strongly. And it's true when we go shopping as well, when we buy something in the private domain also. If I have a bad experience with a supplier or at a store that I typically shop at, what influences my behavior the most is that most recent experience. So if I go to my favorite restaurant and last time I'm there I didn't receive good service, it has more influence on me than the five times that I had good service before that. In addition, in the public domain, with your customers, many times government bleeds together, meaning that if I have a bad experience at the DMV, I assume that government is operating that way in all its offices or all the services that I receive. And so there's a stickiness to these ideas. And that's really what this next to last bullet is about, that CEOs are concerned that one interaction, two interactions, or something that's not related to the evaluation itself might play a significant role in the evaluator's response or the rater's response. And then the last is basis for the review changes based on who's involved. And this would be changes in the board. So this most commonly relates to CEOs concerned about this was the primary emphasis of the board seats changed, or the representative changed, and now they want something slightly different. Wouldn't be completely different, but slightly different. And so those are the principal things that executives identify when they're surveyed, not only in utilities but other organizations, that they have concerns about. And those are the things that many boards attempt to minimize to the best of their ability in putting in place an evaluation process. So what are the elements they include? So what are the things that they put in most often? And we'll start with the graph over on the right-hand side of the slide. So operational metrics make up just about every single evaluation in any industry. Strategy, or that linkage to strategy, just about every evaluation. But the other two areas that are a little less common, but would be considered best practice, one is some type of assessment of the culture and the organization's health, or how well the organization is doing. And so this would be your employee satisfaction. This would be your employee engagement. This would be related to the degree of turnover you might have, if by controllable factors. This would also relate to growth and development. among your employees that might all fall in that portion of the pie that's there in the graph. Then the last piece is the growth and development of the CEO. And so this would not just be a concern in the evaluation with, do you have employees, your rank and file employees going through this growth process and development process. This is also about, does that CEO or is that CEO growing with time? So best practices in CEO evaluations would include multiple elements. It would be linked to organizational, programmatic, and individual outcomes. So it wouldn't just be one level, typically. And the goals would be SMART goals. And I'm sure you've heard SMART goals before. It's been around for a long time. We want it to be specific, clear, understandable. We want everyone to agree on what it means. We want it to be measurable, verifiable, that in essence people can't argue you're looking at it differently, but it means something different than what you think it means. We want it to be attainable. You don't want to set goals that can't be reached. You want it to be relevant, so it needs to be something that actually benefits the strategic mission or the outcomes of the organization, and it needs to be something that can be controlled in a certain period of time. And so this is the idea that it needs to be something during my review cycle, whether it be a quarter, 6 months, a year, even longer. Some organizations have a multi-year review they do to look at longer-term projects or longer-term initiatives. It needs to be something I could have accomplished during that time frame, or that time frame is the relevant time frame for review. So with the utility CEO evaluation practice, now we're going to narrow it down. Now we'll talk about what are some of your peers doing, especially here in Florida, in regards to their CEO reviews or their general manager reviews. The typical review here in Florida has a 5-point scale. So there is a scale that has descriptions for each of the 1 through 5, and the board members read that description in that individual area, and they select the rating that they feel like best matches the description that's provided. Now, many of them also have an open-ended response, meaning I select 1 through 5, and then I provide written narrative in support or identifying goals or identifying other future expectations related to the numbers that I provide, where many of them told us that they have to encourage people to fill out those open-ended components when they fill out the evaluation. They find that that is the most helpful information many times that the general manager or CEO receives. Why? Because if you rate me 3 out of 5, and I'm a rank-and-file employee, let's think about any employee, I'm going to ask you, why am I a 3 versus a 5? What's the rationale? What did I do? What did I not do? And so there's a lot of research that shows if you truly want an employee's performance to improve, you have to provide that narrative that tells them this is why you're a 3, this is how you can become a 4, or the things that would be representative of a 4, or even a 5. Most organizations have the general manager and the committee members complete a form for comparative purposes, so most have a self-assessment, and many of them are structured in a manner in which the CEO or general manager would fill that form out first. Many times that form goes into a briefing that's provided to the board. They do split on those that comes to you before you do your evaluation versus you hear about it when the CEO is presenting to you. But they err more on or favor more you receive that information before you go through and do your review. So it would be the same as if you went to an employee and said to an employee, I'm going to do your review in a month. Please provide me 2 weeks in advance your self-assessment so I can review that before completing your review. And then when I meet with the employee, I'm able to say, here's what you rated yourself. Here's where I feel like you're at. Let's talk about how we can close those gaps over time or those differentials in opinion. So that's the most common approach utilized by employers. With identifying competencies and ensuring they always reflect the most important aspects of the organization, most do have some type of competency component. Some of them are the same competencies that all employees have. So when we think about core competencies in the new organization, that would be honesty, integrity, collaboration. That would be teamwork, problem solving. Some of them use the exact same competencies that they would use for all employees. However, what we're seeing more so, especially over the last 10 years, is organizations are developing executive-level competencies. So the things that would be important to them. And why that is and why that transition is occurring is if you're CEO, your most important implementer of your direction in the organization is not meeting the basic characteristics that you are holding your employees accountable for, you probably have the wrong person in the job. And so if they're scoring poorly on coming to work on time, on being collaborative, on being communicative, then you probably have a bigger issue than did they meet the strategic goals in the organization. But that's still a key part of this process. And why in many of your peers, not only utilities, but in other organizations outside of your peers, that's critical is we've all heard about the manager, maybe not the CEO or general manager, but the manager that's absolutely effective at meeting the numbers. Every time, every report, they meet the numbers. But the employees can't get along with them. They have a lot of turnover. They have a lot of unhappiness. They may even have some unhappy customers, but they're still able to produce the numbers. And so part of the reason why this more holistic approach has become common at all levels in an organization is we want the whole picture. We want that whole pie that we looked at before, not just someone that can meet the operational outcomes or the operational metrics. The last two are tying the strategic direction to specific metrics that the organization can show it is reaching the status and the growth that it wants. And really what this relates to is some organizations that have only narrative, that they're providing a descriptor, don't really indicate which metrics relate to that descriptor. That puts the CEO in the position of saying, I don't know exactly what I need to increase, so that the board members see that this is the narrative they need to pick. So you want to have that bridge between both. You want to be able to say, and I'll show you a few examples of that in a few moments, you want to be able to say if one of your strategic initiatives is expanding your client base or your customer base, you want to be able to say, here's two or three metrics that are being collected by the organization that we're taking under consideration to make our determination on how we would rate you in that regard. If it's modernizing technology, which is a very common one that CEOs or general managers complain about, what does that mean? Is that a new billing system? Is that a new ERP? Is that a new website? What does that specifically mean from an outcome standpoint? And so that's really what they're talking about with this bullet, being able to link back, if it's improving the technological profile or the utilization of technology, what are you going to measure to see that that actually occurred? It's not expenditures. It would be something else that you would identify from an outcome standpoint. Then the last would be the most common method of evaluation ensures that both strategic direction and core competencies are tied together, and they are as comprehensive as possible, meaning they pick up on those individual characteristics and those organizational characteristics. So some would simply be, did I meet the budget? And going back to the 1990s, many organizations, including utilities, realized meeting the budget can lead to a lot of other outcomes I don't desire. And it can lead to things not happening how it hopes it, I hope it would. So meeting the budget or meeting financial expectations became a minimum component. It didn't become the primary component. It's something we just have to have no matter what that we build on top of. And so that's the last component there that your peers indicated when we interviewed them. That's been a key learning process for them. How do we move beyond these traditional things that everyone counts and everyone measures to the things that are really impacting some of the other outcomes that we desire beyond meeting the budget? So here's a listing by peers. So we have Jacksonville, Gainesville. We did use Colorado Springs as an example because they have a similar structure. Lakeland and Tacoma, again, another out-of-state example. I'll share a much more comprehensive list with you as part of that best practice review that we provide next meeting. But this gives you an idea starting with the left-hand side, moving to that first column outside of their organization name, is how many points I can receive as part of their scale. And so 3 being the least in Jacksonville, 7 being the most in Lakeland, but most have 5. And I can tell you as the data is coming in for the other comparables, they are coming back with 5. Quite a few of them have 5 levels. One of the reasons being when you are a rater or when you're evaluating, having a middle position, so having an odd number of options, is many times desirable. When there's an even number of options, our tendency as human beings is to round up. Our tendency is if we have 1 through 4, to always pick 3. If we have 1 through 6, to always pick 4 or 5. And so one of the reasons why evaluation systems are built many times on odd options or an odd number of options is because there should be a center, a true median, or an average present within the rating. Those that align their strategic plan with the core competencies, all of the ones we looked at did that. I can tell you the others are coming back that way as well. Key metrics that are representative of the goals, meaning I read the goal, then under the goal I can see the metric that the board member is going to look at. You have that as well. And what you've identified in your strategic plan, all but Gainesville has an approach in order to do that. The goals of the organization tied to the strategic plan, so if they break goals out or sub-goals that are below the level of the plan, all but Lakeland have that on the form. So, for example, let's go back to that technology example that I gave you. If it's modernized technology in the utility, then I would have subcategories of modernizing technology. Maybe I would have HR-related technology, customer-related technology, billing-related technology, finance-related technology, and then I would might even have subcategories below that that I would be interested in. With completion of the evaluation tool by both, 3 out of 5 have the CEO or the general manager complete before the board completes their review and provides that to them. And then display and outlines clear weights for the transparency. Only Colorado Springs tells exactly what each thing is weighted before it's provided. And part of the reason for this is boards like having the flexibility to alter the weights if there's a specific issue to deal with. And so let's go back to that real example I gave you about the water utility. Dealing with that dam over that month before the evaluation occurred took up a sizable amount of time. The board wanted to have the flexibility to recognize the influence and leadership shown by that executive during that crisis without taking away from some of the other goals that weren't accomplished, because that was the emphasis. Getting the water service restored and dealing with the flooding was the principal emphasis. And so because of that, they wanted the flexibility to alter the weights. That's one of the primary reasons why some of the weighting scales can be altered to account for unforeseen circumstances. However, most organizations, at the beginning of the review period, the board has a workshop where they do talk about these are the most important things. So the board's aware, as well as the general manager would be aware, these are the things that we're most concerned about going forward. And many times they're rated high priority, medium priority, low priority, or there's some mechanism of conveying that as part of the review process. I want to show you a few examples, then open it up for our discussion. So this is a strategy evaluation. So this is one of the peers that we're utilizing here. And so it summarizes the major strategic elements, and it starts off with strategic direction. So it starts off with TPU is a high-performing organization with clearly articulated board governance processes and director performance expectations. And then the strategies are continue to build a positive working and collaborative relationship with the board. So most of your peers do have a question or some type of evaluation element related to board relations. Map out development processes for principles of board governance in key areas. So this is that translating the board's guidance down to the operational areas. And then develop 6 strategic directive policies for board approval by December 31st. So something very actionable. Okay, they want that brought back by the end of the calendar year. Then there's comments and a rating that's given on each of these. And so the board worked together to come up with the comment, the director has done a fantastic job with the board, the onboarding of new board members, setting up issues for informed decision-making, getting the board focused on high-level policy through the retreat strategic directive process. So this is where the board members, this isn't something from a drop-down. This is where they sat and talked about narrative that they could provide in regards to the success or areas for improvement on that one strategy that makes up that strategic direction. Then they also, yes, ma'am.
This is done by the whole board or individuals?
In their case, they sit together and do it as the whole board, but there are some of your peers that individually they do this, and then someone combines it together as part of the feedback. And so in those cases, the comments would, it wouldn't identify which board member said it unless you so desired. It would just have the comments included there. Then the last component would be their scale. And so this is the scale, the Rater scale, that was on the previous slide. So if we go back there, their previous scale is 1 through 5, because they're the last box. So this translates the 1 through 5 into a statement. And so exceptional performance is a 5. So during this review, this CEO received a 5 on basically board relations, interaction with the board. Then there's 4s in the next 2 and slightly different comments. And so, again, they get together as a board and form consensus. You wouldn't be limited by that. We'll talk in a few moments about what approaches you could use or which approach would work best for you. And there are a fair number of boards that simply the comments come from each board member as they complete the form, and they're just combined together into a form like this one. But I wanted to show you this example because it is based on narrative. So from the process standpoint, the narrative is done first, and then from the narrative, a decision is made about, well, is this a 5, is this a 4, is this a 3? So it has that extra step in the process, or extra thinking in the process. It does have the evaluator select the level. So it's not where, as a board member, I simply write my comment and someone else reads my comments and makes a decision. Board members are involved in the entire process that goes into designating the performance. Here's a competency example. So with the competencies, many times it is a separate section, although I'll show you a slide in a few moments that combines the two more or less together. Many of them have something similar to what you utilize with your general employees. So you have a form today where the general employees, their statements the supervisor reads, the employee rates him or herself, and the supervisor rates the employee. So here, in this example, I would go through and rate the level of performance on each of the competencies. Many times for a general manager, it's somewhere between 8 and 10. It's rarely too many more than 10. And there are single weights and an overall weight that typically goes along with that. And so in this case, they do reveal the weight to show that it's evenly weighted across each of the individual competencies that make up the CEO's evaluation. And so it starts off with balancing stakeholders. And so in their case, they're concerned with there's multiple needs as well as demands that are placed on a CEO. How good of a job do they do with balancing the financial constraints with the different stakeholder needs that are brought to them? There's board interaction, similar to the first subcomponent of the one from Tacoma. Courage, this is how much faith and courage do I have in myself to make the hard decisions? And that, believe it or not, is a pretty common element in most CEO evaluations. decision quality, when you ask them to make the day-to-day decisions, how good of a job do they do? If they drive engagement, so this is the internal facing. This is, are they a cheerleader, in essence, for engagement within the organization among the employees? Do they ensure accountability, so not only among their direct reports, but among management in general? Do they develop talent? Are you growing people internally that can move into higher level positions? And there's a lot of research that points to it is almost always cheaper to grow talent in-house than to buy it in the marketplace. So that's why this is so important for CEO evaluation. Instills trust, and this would be at all levels, with employees, with stakeholders, with the community, with the board. Then are they motivational? Can I talk to someone and convince them to do what needs to be done? And also, do they care about safety? The safety of the employees, safety of the community, safety of the organization as a whole. And so this is reported annually in this organization, and this is Colorado Springs. And then the board members are asked to select which of the five best matches that individual, and then they receive an average rating from all board members and a weight based on that. Now, in their case, they have an open-ended box so that you can provide open-ended comments, and they also have the strategy elements. So this is not their whole evaluation. This is just an example of the competency piece. But they would have the ability to say, you know, the CEO this year made some hard decisions. There were a lot of challenges. He or she stepped up and dealt with those. There would still be that opportunity to provide it, but it's a very comprehensive in how they designed it tool in identifying what are the things that their board believes will make that CEO successful from a competency standpoint or from a knowledge, skill, and ability standpoint. But here's one that combines it together. This is one that has the competencies and has the metrics. And so it shifts the rater from being solely a rater to being a data evaluator. So this is the example I mentioned to you in my earlier comments. In some, the board members are given a book. They're given a packet of information. And many times HR prepares that. HR sends that to the board members anywhere from 30 to 60 days before the review period. And many times the CEO writes, or the general manager writes, a state of the organization, does his or her self-evaluation. That comes in the book as well. So you'd receive a notebook. That notebook would have the outcome metrics. It would have any other reports, like employee satisfaction surveys, customer satisfaction surveys. It would have the more detailed information that falls below what you're using in many cases as metrics on your current strategic plan. So you'd have that additional documentation. Board members would have the ability then to review that documentation. Then they would go to each competency, and they would be able to evaluate the competency numerically as well as in writing. And so here in this example, the first competency is leadership. We will lead by example, learn from the past, provide direction for the present, plan for the future. Individual displays confidence in self and others, earns respect and trust, performs well under pressure, exhibits the courage to take appropriate action. We have courage again. Motivates others, achieves measurable results, and models the behaviors expected of others. And then in their case, instead of saying this one measure can capture all of that, they have a list of items that are in their notebook or in their review materials that they can take a look at and draw their own conclusions. Now, this is much more labor-intensive for this board because you're looking through these documents. So in this case, they're saying the strategic plan action item completion. So they have a separate report that comes from the CEO identifying the completion of the strategic plan items for the year or the current status, the percent of completed performance evaluations. So this is not how many the CEO completed. This is what's the percentage organization-wide. So to what degree has the CEO led from the standpoint of having all the managers fill those out on time so every employee can receive that feedback? The number that are done on time, so those that made the deadline, whatever that hard and fast deadline is, and then departmental achievements and accomplishments. So there would also be a report of recognition, awards that the organization received over the course of the year. As board members, you receive those. I'm sure you receive briefings on a regular basis of we receive this recognition. I'm sure you have that information throughout the year, but this booklet for this one would put that all together for you. You'd be able to see all of that together in one document that you'd be able to review during the review cycle, the performance review cycle. So that would be something staff would provide to you for you to take a look at. Again, a slightly different approach than the other two approaches. So with that in mind, I know it was a lot, and it's after lunch, and I think you guys have been outside all most of the day. So these are the things that I need your help with in preparing for our next meeting. So factors, measures, processes, calculations, and rewards. So these are the things that the elements that will guide our discussion when we get together next time. And what we'll hope to do is bring back to you examples as well as potentially examples you want to emulate or you want to adopt or things that we craft based on those examples that you would want to utilize as part of your evaluation process. And so the factors really are based on those elements that can go into the evaluation. What would you want included in the actual evaluation? And one way to think about this is think of it as a sheet of paper. Think of it as a paper that you're filling out or a computer form you're filling out. Strategic goals you have currently. So you probably want to keep those. So strategic goals are the most common element in any CEO, utility or non-utility, review. Competencies are another option. So keep in mind that's like that example we looked at from Colorado Springs. And you've had some of that in the past in your review, I believe. And so those would be either factors that you're comfortable with that every employee should be evaluated with, or factors that only managers should be evaluated with, or it could be competency factors that only the CEO would need to have. So that would be where you could rate, either through written form or through score, the competencies that you want to see in that individual. Keep in mind, with competencies, that helps you somewhat with development. In any employee in a competency assessment or review, that's what tells me as an employee I need to go out and look for development on or training on or the things I need to emphasize or new experiences that I need to gain. And so that's why competencies have become quite common in performance evaluations, but also in recruiting and retention and training and other areas of HR as well. The next would be performance indicators. These are just the metrics. These are, do you want to have metrics? How do you want to use the metrics? What role would the metrics play? And then the last would be personal goals. If the CEO identifies things that he or she will accomplish over the next year, would you want to evaluate that as well? Would you want to say, yes, they accomplished that, or no, they didn't, or would that be something you want to work on jointly with them as you go through that process? Then the measures, like we talked about before, it could be ratings. It could be a scale, 1 through 3, 1 through 5, 1 through 7. You could link it to metrics. So you could say, if the metric's at this level, this is what it means. You could have narrative, open-ended responses, so similar to that first strategic example where they provided narrative, or you could have a combination thereof. And so in Colorado Springs' case, they combine all three. Most of your peers do not, because the more you put in, the more time it takes for you to go through the review process. And quite frankly, the more information you're going to need to do a comprehensive job. And so most boards end up finding that balance somewhere in the middle. But you could include all three components. With the process, as I mentioned, self-assessment's fairly common among your peers. Board review is a very common element. I would argue that all of them that we've talked with, and really any ones I've interacted with in my career, the board had some influence in the evaluation process. Staff would be if you want staff feedback. So you have the SPA form that goes out. And that's where Brian sends out to his direct reports a form or someone on his staff does, and they fill out a series of standardized questions about his leadership. And so that's done throughout the organization currently. So that would be what this is really referring to, something similar to that where staff have input. Now, organizations use that data differently. Some set it as a level that should be attained. We want X percentage of happy direct reports. Others review that whole booklet and make a determination as a board member of what they feel like that booklet means. Some write narrative about, here's some guidance about what you might ought to do based on what came back from your direct reports. And then the last would be customers. Almost all utilities include a customer service component or customer feedback. And so that would be, again, another stakeholder group in the process that you would utilize. Would you weight it the same as employees? Maybe, maybe not. That'd be a board decision. Would you weight it as much as the self-assessment? Again, that's a board decision as well. So this is just laying out each of the factors that could go into what's combined to create the tool that we put in place. Then most have some type of weights. They could be equal weights. They could be weighted differently. So that'll be part of our conversation next time. And then the last piece, the reward, which we'll have at the end of our discussion next time. That's really about, what are we hoping to accomplish here? Are we hoping to, first and foremost, make a decision, should the CEO or general manager continue? Yes, that needs to be part of the process. Are we keeping the person or not? Number two should be, how do we want to recognize or reward what this person has accomplished? And so there's a variety of ways. Some organizations is a percentage of base. So it's added into my base pay that goes through the rest of my career. It's becoming more common that it's a bonus, that it's something that's one time. And why that is there's a lot of research on performance, and this is not CEO exclusive, it's employees in general, that throughout my career, I have different levels of performance. So many times as employers, we go out and try to hire the very best candidate that's going to be a high performer. And we assume if they're a high performer the first couple years, they'll be a high performer the 30-year career they might have with my organization or our organization. That's not always the case. People have things that come up. They have challenges in their life. Technology changes. Work processes change. People are promoted and they're not ready to be promoted. There's a variety of things that influence performance. And one of the reasons why more innovative organizations are looking at bonuses is that allows me in the years that the person really stepped up and did that special project or really exceeded everyone else in their business unit or their area, I can do something for them. But I'm not cascading or multiplying that effect over the life of their whole career. Because if performance is increased over the life of the whole career, there's a cumulative effect that goes along with that. And so because senior leadership in the private sector, as you know, but in many public organizations today, have a variable component, meaning I'm rewarded for what I've accomplished during that time frame, that's why we're seeing bonuses be a little bit more common method to reward based on the performance evaluation. So why don't I pause there? I want to open it up for any comments or feedback, not just about this slide, but about presentation in general or any guidance you'd like to provide me. Yes, ma'am.
I have probably a couple of questions.
Okay.
One was being, are any of the organizations that you've gathered information from, do they do more than just an annual formal evaluation, or do they do anything informally?
So they all the ones we've surveyed so far have an annual process. However, some have a quarterly report. But nothing would happen on this rewards column. Nothing would happen to me from a reward standpoint if I've done well in that quarter. It's simply the board's mechanism for receiving an update on progress toward the items identified in the evaluation. Now, it will overlap. It will have the same strategic objectives and goals. It will have, if there's strategic projects that have been identified, that would be part of that update. So a fair number of them have a quarterly process that they're receiving updates on the progress, but they're not utilizing it so much for rewards as much as if those goals are not going to be attained, they want to be aware. They want to be aware before the evaluation cycle ends. So there's not any that we've come across so far that would change compensation or pay a bonus for the quarter. But there are ones, many, that give guidance if they have that in place. So the board would say, we're not going to make this now. We need to talk about that.
The way that we meet here is that we come together once a month for a meeting. We don't necessarily have a lot of interaction other than at that point in time. So we don't know what goes on in the day-to-day environment.
Mm-hmm.
To even have an opportunity to evaluate anything. How do other organizations deal with that?
It would vary between those that the board members have offices on site, which I understand that you don't have that here. If you had offices on site and you came in and there was some type of cycle, and it's usually not a fixed schedule, but came in, many of the organizations that have board members in that role, they walk around a little bit. So they walk around and they might go to one department one week that they're in. They might go to another department. And it's not scientific, but it's more just the feedback they receive, talking to employees, going out on the work site, whatever the case might be. A fair number of boards are more like yourself, where you're meeting once a month, you're not here on site on a regular basis, and so you're much more dependent on mechanisms that are present here to collect data you can review. And so employee satisfaction or climate surveys, engagement surveys, issues that the CEO reports on to you as a board. The items of, you know, we have this turnover is concentrated in this area, or we're having a hard time hiring in this area. Many of those things among boards that don't have an on-site presence are utilized for them to evaluate the environment. But the vast majority is the former example that I gave. They utilize that survey work that's done about employee satisfaction or engagement.
Well, to me, surveys are only as good as the moment in which they're done.
Yes, ma'am.
They don't reflect over a 12-month period. I'm sorry.
Correct.
They don't. So what are the other mechanisms that other organizations use to obtain that type of information?
Well, coming back to the first part of your point, best practice today is that survey process not be done once a year. Most organizations today, bigger than yourselves, would survey employees more often than once a year, and they would take a smaller sample. So we would have a group of employees that we might open the survey to, or we might solicit feedback from at different points throughout the year, and we would track that change throughout the year. Those that are not in that position or have the resources to do that, although today those resources are very inexpensive, because you can do that in-house, you can do that with technology that's basically free. Those that don't, some other options is they have an employee committee, and that employee committee has various focus groups or interactions with employees throughout the year, and they come and provide a report to the board. So that's one alternative that we see in some large metropolitan utilities. Some organizations would have, it's almost like a board member week, and it's where board members that are not on site on a regular basis have a period of time, and it's a discrete period of time, that they are on site. And so they'll answer questions, they'll interact with employees. Sometimes they will have periodic, and by periodic more than once a year, workshops where the board is present, even sitting in this room, and employees can come and talk to you about thoughts, ideas, suggestions. So that's another approach that's utilized by some utilities. There's not one tried and true method that's out there. Surveys, I think, why they're being utilized more is employees, if it's a quick survey, have a high response. It's something that doesn't cost a lot of money to do, and it doesn't remove them from the job site for extended periods of time. Where the more face-to-face or qualitative methods, you have to build in the time where the employee, or it takes your time to go to the work site to conduct the sessions. And so I think that's why we see a little bit more of the survey as the tool. Yes, ma'am.
I feel like we've got the strategic goals and evaluating them and having that as part of our evaluation. That's pretty well in place, and I feel good about that. The competency evaluation is difficult because we may be here 2 hours a month, and that's a big part of our interaction with KUA. I like the idea of having some data gathered and give us a notebook, which we can sit down with. I've certainly tried to look at the evaluations that we do have access to, but they didn't feed into doing the evaluation. So maybe we can figure a way to make that go more smoothly. And I really like the idea of a self-evaluation if that's not offensive to a CEO. I think we can learn a whole lot from that. One nice thing is we don't have to worry as much about the reward as we did before, because our CEO is now tied to the salary and will automatically go up with the rest of the employees in the organization.
Market level.
Market level increase. So if we make a decision that he's staying, that's automatic. So maybe we can come up with a way to do a bonus which is less, not based on a format that here's a four and here's a three and whatever, where if he's had a wonderful year and his self-evaluation gives us lots of input of things that have been accomplished, we could almost line out a form like the evaluation there that exceeded expectations, where we had input and came up with a justification that a bonus on, in addition to the market level raise, was made available, put in place, whatever.
Yes, ma'am.
I think our major drawback here is the fact that we do not have daily back and forth with staff. And I think that's what keeps us from being completely aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
I know that about a year ago, I scheduled a meeting with every one of the vice presidents and sat down with them and gathered information. It was very helpful. I wonder if we could somehow utilize that type of thing where maybe each VP would. They give us reports, but so different during the year, but not like one-on-one talking about things. If we could somehow incorporate that, because I think we're sitting here, we do not have the information
right
to answer a lot of these questions. We just don't. And the survey that goes through, you don't get a lot of, I don't think you get straight answers. We have one person that definitely
did on one of the surveys, and they were very outspoken about how they felt. So that would totally feel what they felt. But we're in a position where, as a board, we don't get a lot of information to be able to.
So it sounds like for our work, we need to find a way that we can put information in your hands, give you the flexibility to then follow up how you want to follow up,
mm-hmm.
and then come back and have something that you feel comfortable with if you did want to fund a bonus.
And maybe gathering information for more than the VPs.
Okay.
Maybe down another level, because I know always before, if you've got half a dozen VPs, the CEO certainly knows who said what, which limits what you're willing to say. So maybe having enough input to let data be more inclusive.
Okay.
I think the survey does, it's not just the VPs. I think it's all employees, is it not?
The SPA that's report that's delivered to the board is just from the CEO's direct reports.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just one point. If the board wants to go in the direction of having more interaction with staff, we may need to amend or repeal the 1989 directive that has been discussed several times for the board. And the bylaws may need to be tweaked.
But the important thing is we don't want to run the company.
No, you don't want.
No.
That's what I'm sitting here going, we don't want individual board members going into the VPs and saying,
no.
And I think that could happen. Not that I would do it or anybody on this board would do it, but going forward, yeah, there's a hazard, I think, of that. So I think we have to be very careful.
That's where if they can couch a vehicle to gather data, so we're not independently gathering our own data. I know I've got two. Ethel. I don't know who had their hand up first. I think Manny did.
Ladies first.
Okay, Ethel.
Thank you.
we all know the difference between being a board person and being an operational person. And so the operational group is doing what they have to do. And when we come and discuss things with them, we hardly ever discuss how they're operating or performing something or doing their functions. We are looking for information, and we're subtle enough to get it without finding out how exactly they're doing their jobs. So I think that what we're asking for is more contact to be able to get our own impressions and not statistics and numbers and functions. And so 12 times a year that we come together and we see someone at action, it's not enough time to say what I saw is plenty, and therefore, based on what I saw, I'm going to give this person a bonus. I think it's got to be a little more. It definitely has to be a little more. Now, we're smart enough to be able to see when we're being manipulated and when we're actually seeing an action that deserves more. And if we look at reports that are prepared with the idea that we're impressed, we're going to be impressed.
Right.
So there is also all of that going on. So we just need contact, I think, and for us to make our own mind as to what we see.
Okay.
Manny?
I'm a big component of evaluating a CEO by other companies. If we're heading in the right direction and we have our goals that are being reached, and that's because if that's not happening, then the CEO is not doing properly. And to me, 90% or 95% of the evaluation would be based on something like that. But during the month, I was at home thinking about this meeting and so forth. So I wrote down things that have been mentioned there already. Things like to list the strategic goals and how they're being accomplished at the time. The attitude of the CEO, the whole attitude of the CEO, the leadership, how do we measure his leadership qualities? CEO's communication with the board on an individual basis or with the board itself? The CEO communication and contact with the community, how is that part of evaluation? Inputs from the immediate supervisor in writing without bypassing completely the CEO, in writing anonymously. At times, maybe board members should go to board meetings and just be an observer of how the CEO runs and so forth, just as an observer.
You mean staff meetings?
Staff meetings, yes, staff meetings, yes. Maybe we should meet, like you were saying, with staff members on an individual basis once in a while just to discuss and in private. We definitely have to have the employee service. It's important. I know it's sort of like limited and it's only for a time period and how the individual, what they want to tell us at that point. But I think it's still important. And also a customer survey. And you put all these things together. I mean, if we're going to have metrics, we're going to have metrics.
Right.
We've got to have something to check. And the numbers, I have some difficulty with numbers because it's pretty subjective. A 3 to me is a 5 to someone else, and a 5 to someone else is a 1. And how do you justify? I like passing failure type sort of measurement versus attaching a number to it, because then you have to start justifying. And if you're going to give someone a 3 and not a 5, and then we have to justify. We just can't say 3. What does your 3 mean? And how do you do that? And next year, if you want that 4, then this is what you have to do. And if we're going to do that, what is that going to be attached to?
Right.
So forth. So those are my thoughts on what we need to properly evaluate the CEO. And like I said, personally, with my military background, I look at how the if the ship is floating and everything is working properly, the CEO is doing his job, and I'm good with that. The ship starts to sink, CEO's losing his job.
Lights go out. Yeah. If the lights go out, we got a problem.
Yeah, don't be it. Yeah.
And so forth. So too long to evaluate the CEO.
Right.
Yes.
Anyway, so those are my thoughts.
Thank you.
I think we had a very good example today of how our employees feel, mm-hmm. and how the team and the family of KUA feels, because we had our employee
appreciation
today, mm-hmm. and we have the field day, which in I commented at the time when we were looking at the employees, they were all getting along together, they were happy, it looked like nobody was like a group that hated anybody. They were just all part of a family, it seemed like. And it stood out to me. And to me, that was a great statement of how the CEO is handling his position at this point, that everybody's happy, everybody's engaged. And that said a lot to me today, just one day.
Mm-hmm. Ethel?
I don't particularly agree with that because this is a large company for Kissimmee, but it's not a global company. So I see it as a tiny thing when I see it from my perspective, and it's very well treated in many ways, way above the standard of Kissimmee. So there is really no reason for the people to be unhappy or upset or not in compliance, and they're decent people as well. You know, it's a decent job. And so they behave accordingly, I think. And so if they have nice comments, well, yes, I appreciate it, I understand it, and I think it's because the company does go way above the standard. And that's all I expect of them. I don't think that I would say it's top company just because someone say they enjoy the job here and they get well paid and they get promoted and all these different things that they do get. They get lots of benefits. So I don't think I expect less.
Okay.
So my standard is up here, and I don't want to lower the standard just because of what I see someone say or do. And I'm glad that it's a happy company, and I'm glad the employees that we have are good, and I am glad that they're understanding that it is a good company. I am glad of all of that, but I don't want to feel that just because someone feels happy here that the CEO is doing a good job.
Okay.
I don't see that relationship there. And it's nothing against Brian, of course, but that should not be the matrix.
Well, I didn't say it was the only thing, but it certainly does give you an idea of people that we have
the culture. The culture.
It's just
man that sat and talked with us about how he came to KUA and has grown, and he was amazed at how he was able to grow himself and how the company encouraged it. It was a wonderful story. And
but that's the company, is what I'm saying. That doesn't come. It's not like Brian does that for him. The company does that for him.
His leadership, it wouldn't be happening.
It's the culture of the company.
It's the company.
And certainly the CEO has a lot to do with the culture of the company.
My last advice is to try to keep this process as simple as possible. I don't want to get into macromanaging anything.
No.
Right.
Too busy in my life.
Right.
Too busy playing golf.
Don't interfere with my golf game. but seriously, we got to keep it simple. And I get, because we could make it so complicated that he'll be thinking of all these other things that we put on him, and he will be might not focus on what he should be focusing on, which is management. And not worrying about pleasing the board,
right?
On every issue, you know, he has to make his decision as the CEO, and then he has to come and justify it. And if he's comfortable with that, that's good. So, but we don't want to put so much on him that he has to be looking over his shoulder on a daily basis. That's micromanagement. It's not. I'm not here for that.
Makes sense.
And I think we've had a change of philosophy too, where we feel comfortable with talking to the VPs, whereas before Brian, who was discouraged.
Okay.
That's almost to the point where, as a new board member, you just were almost told not to.
Well, that's the thing that Grant was talking about. We would need to change if that is the philosophy that we can speak to a VP.
And once again, we got to be careful of that too.
Yep.
Yes, but I think the CEO has to know. I mean,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Of course, it's not a rant.
There's a flat prohibition.
It's not a secret.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, and
yes.
I hate, because this is great, great discussion by the board. You do have your regularly scheduled meeting
yes.
at 3:30, so if you could.
Let me ask one quick question, Dr. Ling.
Certainly.
Do you feel like you need to interact with us individually between now and next month? And if so, are you other board members willing to chat with him if he has some specific questions?
Well, I think we'll probably text us or whatever. Yes, but put a lot of information.
Oh, we have.
In the basket, I hope that you would see how we feel and come back with stuff without any extra.
To be cognizant of your time, if a board member wants to reach out to me, Cindy as well as Brian have my contact information. I'm happy to talk with you. What I might propose to save a little bit of your time is I'll put together the materials for the next session. If after the next session you feel like, well, this I can't live with this piece, I would definitely, Madam Chair, like to take up a board members on the opportunity to meet with them and say, okay, how can we get you on board? And so I'll do the data collection. If there's something you want to share with me, please feel free to reach out to me. Also, I'm in the area quite a bit. I travel north to south almost every week to work with clients in South Florida. If you want to meet in person or you want to meet by phone, either one would work. But I would take you up on that. If after the next meeting we feel like there's one or two make or break items, then I would want to have a discussion.
Is it possible to get that package prior to the meeting?
That's what I was going to ask.
Certainly. Certainly.
Yes,
so I'll work with Cindy and we'll coordinate putting it together and make sure it's in your hands beforehand.
Dr. Ling, did we fill the holes that you needed on the slide?
Yes. Yes, I appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions or whatever? Cindy.
I have something just quick. I know y'all mentioned about possibly a self-evaluation that, you know, if that's something to consider, that is something that we do now with our review process with all the employees. The management then has the SPA that's attached to that. So I printed out, I'm going to give you all to have that available so you can think that through, and it's on the second page. Again, the employee rates themselves, right? They complete the evaluation, and then they give it to their supervisor. So that's how that comes in play in the supervisor rates.
Same
so just
thing.
Something for you to have and have available prior to and just help with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Then I will adjourn this meeting, and we'll be back in a little over 15 minutes.